What's up, ladies and gentlemen? This is the American Psycho, Lance Hoyt. You are listening to Interactive Wrestling Radio.
Interactive Wrestling Radio. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Interactive Wrestling Radio right here on WrestlingEpicenter.com. My name is James Walsh, and boy, am I glad you guys tuned in today. I think we have a special one for you. For the third time in our show's history, we're welcoming Lance Hoyt, Lance Archer, Vance Archer, however you know him best, the current GHC and NWA World Tag Team Champion, joins us to discuss New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he currently holds those belts, as well as a member of the roster of Global Force Wrestling, discussing the launch, doing promotional work with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, as well as the one and only Chosen One, Jeff Jarrett. Fantastic interview with a great guy. Really get an opportunity to pick his brain. And we're going to try and get him back on once Global Force does debut on television, which I have a very peaceful feeling knowing that they have everything sorted out. If this is your first experience here in the Wrestling Epicenter, be sure and check us out online at www.wrestlingepicenter.com. There you will find our newsline as well as our store with some great wrestling DVDs, as well as our lovely divas, and our entire archives of interviews that we've done over the past 12 years, including the two prior with Lance Hoyt, which you can check out after listening to our brand new one. Also, give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/wrestlingepicenter. There we post every single day some daily divas, as well as our sarcastic view on pro wrestling in a loving way. We kid because we love. So give us a like on there. And again, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to Lance Hoyt for giving up his evening with us. And we hope you guys enjoy this interview, and go check out GlobalForceWrestling.com as well and support their Grand Slam tour, which starts very, very soon.
Oh, hey, folks, this is Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the Interactive Interview. Tough guy.
Welcome back to Interactive Wrestling Radio. Joining us on the newsmaker line for the third time, no less, is a guy who joined us the first time to promote TNA, the second time to talk about leaving WWE and heading to Japan, and now still a member of Japan, the one half of the GHC Tag Team Champions and NWA Tag Team Champions, and now a part of Global Force Wrestling. He is Lance Hoyt, Vance Archer. How you doing, sir?
Good, man. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. It's great to have you on the show again, and it seems like we always got something to talk about when we have you on, and I got to tell you, it's an exciting time to be a wrestling fan. We're recording this the night that Ring of Honor debuts on Destination America alongside TNA, and obviously you guys, I have a very calm feeling that you guys already have your TV stuff all set, so I think that we're going to see some interesting stuff here in the next couple of months for wrestling.
It definitely is an interesting time for wrestling fans. I think it's a great time for wrestling fans. You know, WCW is always, you know, Woman Crush Wednesday or whatever. I'm calling it Wrestling Crush Wednesday. So
there you go.
I mean, there's just too many options, too many products to watch, and too many things to enjoy if you're a wrestling fan, and especially this day and age with DVR and, you know, the NXT product being, you know, capable on your whatever device you're using at the moment to watch it whenever you want. I mean, you have a chance on Wednesday night to watch 4 hours of wrestling and different products with different styles and different talents. And if you're a fan, man, I think it's a great time.
It's really cool. You got Ring of Honor, you got TNA, you got Lucha Underground, and you got NXT. So you got four different shows, each bringing something a little bit different. And that's, you know what, it's a dream come true. I grew up in the New York, New Jersey area, and, you know, on our public access channel, we always had some kind of independent wrestling airing, and most people don't remember any of that stuff, but that was a great companion to the WWF and NWA. And having these options again, and especially for you guys, for places to work, is definitely a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's high quality options too. That's the great part about it, you know.
Absolutely. So I got to tell you, when I saw that you were going to be part of Global Force Wrestling, I got excited, and I think you were probably the first email I fired off was to talk about it. So let's talk a little bit about it. I saw you on at the baseball game, and you were there alongside Jim Duggan, who is as much of a ham as ever, and you got to love him.
Yep, absolutely.
And Jeff Jarrett, who, I mean, the guy's a visionary. So what was it like getting the call about Global Force Wrestling, and what do you think about their different kind of blueprint than what we're seeing right now?
Well, you know, I think the good thing, and I think Jeff's actually mentioned it in some of the interviews that he's done about Global Force Wrestling, is his willingness and wanting to use different talents from different places at different times, which I think is going to provide for maybe not what people are used to. You know, people are used to a crew of guys, and that's what they see on a consistent basis. And that is good, but I think at the same time, what this is going to provide is a new flavor all the time. You know, and I think that's one of the things that kind of is missing sometimes, because you get – not that guys or girls get stale because they're always working hard and they're always trying to make their mark, but I think sometimes the product can feel like it gets a little stale because that turnover isn't very high, which – is good for the talent that are working, not necessarily for the fans that are watching, because there are going to be guys and girls that they want to see on a more consistent basis. But the ability to watch high quality, good wrestling, great personalities, all the characteristics that I think you need to have successful professional wrestling shows is going to be involved in different avenues. You know, when they start the shows here pretty soon in June, leading up to the first TV tapings in July at the Orleans in Las Vegas.
Exactly.
You know, they're going to just be a lot of different shows with a lot of different talents at a lot of different times. Some of them are going to be considered more mainstay Global Force Wrestling talent, and they're going to see a lot of the local talent that are in and around the area that are, A, could be a part of Global Force Wrestling, and B, are very high-quality wrestlers themselves. So the mix of talent that the wrestling fans are going to get to see on a consistent basis from Global Force Wrestling, I think, is what's going to make it a little bit different and exciting, because you kind of going to know what you're going to get.
Absolutely. And one of the things I like about it is it sounds like they took the blueprint, and I know you're one half of the NWA Tag Team Champions, the blueprint of what the NWA has been trying to do for so long and never had the national kind of exposure to recapture the glory days of what the NWA once was. They're going to do that. Global Force Wrestling seems like it's kind of capitalizing on that theory, but doing it on a scale that's going to really land.
Right.
All right. So, I mean, Jeff Jarrett was talking about your brand of wrestling and promoting the Grand Slam Tour, which is an awesome name for the tour, by the way, and you guys are going to be doing baseball stadiums. So my question for you, unfortunately, we did see recent shows in the U.S. in the baseball stadium, and they did not do so good. Is there any concern about that, and how are you guys, you know, fearing the turnout factor?
Well, I mean, I think it's always a concerning factor in the sense that you're working outdoor events. It is during the summertime, so it's going to be pretty hot. But the one thing that I think it does have in its corner is the fact that it's a new product, and like it's got that name that's starting to get that buzz, and he's had a good buzz around it for quite a while now, and now he's doing something with it, and now people are going, well, let's see what this is about. And I think if the wrestling fans that are out there, and like we've discussed already, with the amount of good wrestling that's out there and the excitement that exists around professional wrestling, and not just from the WWE standpoint, but from Ring of Honor, TNA, you know, obviously Japan and New Japan with their influence into the United States market, to the U.S. market, as of mostly recently with their product that's on Access Television on Friday nights.
Which is awesome.
I mean, you've got just so many high quality, good independent shows that are running. I mean, I was a part of one in Texas most recently called Main Event Wrestling, and they drew 1,000+ people in Carthage, Texas. You know, it's just a small place. And they just promoted well, and the fans were there. The people have that buzz about wrestling. And I think that's what's going to be on GFW's side, is it's going to be in a baseball stadium. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes people look at the stadiums because they're bigger. They're designed for, you know, I was just out at the Round Rock Express game with Jeff and with Jim, and we were promoting, and they had 11,000 people at the game, and it's a really big, it's an amazing stadium. Like, if you didn't know what the Round Rock Express was about, and you just thought you were going to a professional baseball game, you'd absolutely believe you're there, because the facility is absolutely top-notch. It just doesn't have, like, a second tier like a Texas Rangers stadium would, in Houston Astros team might, but everything else about it is top-notch, first class. But it's a bigger venue, and I think that's unfortunate, because sometimes people see the shows, and even if there's 1,000 people there or 2,000 people watching this wrestling show in a baseball stadium, because it is so big, sometimes it looks smaller than it should be, and you never know what it's going to be. I think it's a starting off process, it's a growing process. I think people are excited about GFW, and they should be. They're going to get to see a lot of really good wrestling from a lot of good wrestlers. You know, on June 12th and 13th, the first set of shows that GFW is doing in the Grand Slam Tour, you know, you've got the Bullet Club, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, who are the current IWGP, the Kingdom of the current IWGP champions, I'm sorry. But, you know, regardless, they're one of the longest reigning IWGP Tag Team Champions out of New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is respectfully considered one of the best companies in the world right now.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you're going to get to see, like, PJ Black, formerly Justin Gabriel. You're going to see Chris Adonis, formerly Chris Masters. And I think he's underrated sometimes. I've had some amazing matches with that dude, and he's a big dude, and people just don't understand how good he actually is. And they're going to get to see all this, and they should be excited. And hopefully, once it starts to gets going and the promotions come with it, I mean, Jeff's out there right now tirelessly working on promoting this. He's been to stadium after stadium, night after night, state after state, promoting these shows at these events, you know, months in advance, which hopefully if the venues get behind it and help promote it, and they get some of the local talent involved, and those local talent get, you know, involved in helping to promote themselves, going to be a part of it. I think there's a lot of chance for a lot of good things. You know, it may not start out 15,000 people, but, you know, if we get, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 people or whatever starting out, and it builds from that, and the TV product comes out well, and it gets some legs on itself, you're going to see some really, really cool things. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off like that.
No, absolutely. I'm excited about it. You know, there was a lot of people have been poo-pooing the idea of the baseball stadium. That's why I asked. And obviously,
right,
we're referring to the TNA turnouts, which you could have counted on by the dozens. But
right,
people also forget that was also a very turbulent time for TNA, where things were on a downturn as well. So it's not like this, which is a completely different vibe, which is a let's come and see what these guys have to offer, because this is clearly going to be something to watch, because it's
absolutely,
it's on the upswing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the whole business, you know, on that independent, in a sense, level is on an upswing. If you look at Ring of Honor and how well they're doing and how well they're starting to do, and obviously with their debut on Destination America tonight, they're getting more viewership and more eyes on them. You know, I really hope for the wrestling world's sake that, you know, TNA and Destination America can work out whatever situation they have going, and that it continues, because there's a lot of great talent. You know, I've been watching the tag matches that the Dirty Heels and the Wolves have been having, and, you know, week after week, those guys are just tearing it up. And, you know, I'm putting that over, and I'm a tag team person myself, you know, but it's just a lot of fun to watch. You know, EC3 doing what he's done, and I've known him since FCW developmental days, and just the lack of opportunity he really got there, and to see how well he's doing now with TNA, and it'd be really
incredibly
sad.
Polished. Considering he never was on WWE TV, he is incredibly polished.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, 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 really good, and it'd be really sad if and when the product disappears, you know, on US TV, and then if it disappeared altogether, that would be really sad, because there's a lot of talented wrestlers, from the Eric Youngs to the Bobby Roods, you know, that these are guys that I know and I've known for a long time and were there when I was there, you know, if and when they had to go out and start looking for new places to work.
Going into a deeper territory, I mean, there's kind of these rise and fall of WCW, rise and fall of ECW, and everybody expresses their views. Do you have any view on where the wrong turn was for TNA? And, I mean, I'm with you. I want all the options in the world as a wrestling fan to watch. And I watched tonight. You know, I've never stopped watching, even though I've been disappointed sometimes. But, you know, what was the turn?
Well, releasing me was the first wrong turn way back in 2009. I would say that for sure. I don't know, man. I don't know what the exact you can say that is the wrong term. I think they were trying a lot of things. They were trying to do the things, you know, that people have been saying you've got to go do. You can't stay in Orlando. You got to get to Orlando. Well, they attempted that. Whether they did it the right way, I don't know. I wasn't there and I wasn't a part of the company, but they did try it. I don't think the Monday Night Wars scenario was a good one, just because this is a DVR age and people don't have to switch back and forth. They don't have to choose to watch one or the other. They can simply DVR both of them if they want to and watch them later if they feel like it. You know, it's not a situation where it was back in the WCW, WWF Monday Night Wars days. It's a very different era in that sense. So to pinpoint where they went wrong, I think it was just a culmination of a lot of different things. Whether you liked it, the wrestlers or not, whether they got away from we're supposed to be, which was total nonstop action. You know, I mean, that's just hearsay, and it's just other people saying what they're doing. You know, I think if you watch their product now, it's very strong wrestling with still some of the best wrestlers in the world on their product. You know, but they're fighting an uphill battle trying to reclaim their place in the business. And that's kind of unfortunate because they've been around for so long and working so hard with a lot of talented guys and girls that are just working really hard. So I feel bad sometimes when, like, the fans, unfortunately, get very negative about the wrestling that's happening or what's the product that exists on the TV. You know, I've gotten some Twitter arguments with fans before because I've said at different times, you know, if something negative happens to, say, TNA or whatnot, that in a sense it's their fault for not choosing to support it. And, you know, they've really gotten on to me because I've said stuff like that. And what I'm really meaning is that, you know, there's just too many people and too many fans, in my opinion, that were always trying to look for the negative. You know, they were just as quick as they could to go, well, that sucked and that was horrible and this guy's no good and why are they doing that?
You know
that
what it is, though, as well, though?
What's
it's
that?
Because they think that it makes them sound smart.
Right.
To be,
you know,
so negative,
just,
oh, well, I think that sucked. Don't I sound smart? Well, you just sound really bitter.
Yeah, and that's what I always just try to say was, you know, I wish they would just find whatever positive they can, whatever guy or girl that they really like, and focus on that and put that over and be positive about what they're watching. If it's something negative, just don't give any response. Ignore it. You know, act like it didn't exist. You know, and if the companies get no response from something or about something, they'll realize, man, this has got no legs. But, you know, we're loving Rockstar Spud. We're loving the Knockouts division. We're loving what Kurt Angle or Bobby Lashley's doing. We're loving what the BDC is doing, you know. And these are all positive things that are happening now. And I hope that the wrestling fans will just focus on that. You know, it's like Ring of Honor tonight. If they just focus on the positive things, and I'm sure there's going to be some negative nannies out there that'll say whatever they're going to say. I hope they don't. But, you know, there's so many good things about what's on TV and professional wrestling right now. And that's what, if the fans would just rally behind that, because they are the lifeblood of the business. Without them, none of this grows. None of this gets better. None of this gets, you know, any more legs, and there is no more choice. And you have to watch what is put out there by the biggest company in the world, you know, and even their product. I think they're having to step up because of their own internal product, and that is NXT. You know, it's an amazing process to kind of see, which I think is what makes it fun and exciting for the fans right now.
Right. Your guy who worked in the developmental territory of WWE was FCW back then, but it's got to be pretty cool to see that the developmental stuff is almost as esteemed, right, that they're doing on the, you know, the shows that are getting watched by 5 million people.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very, very different situation right now than when I was a part of the FCW product and you know, developmental systems prior to that and whatnot. Whereas I think when I was there, it was really, really a developmental system. What you see on the NXT product, though, you know, when you're watching on TV, because they've got so many guys and girls that are behind the scenes and they're training on a daily basis and they're working towards getting onto that NXT product. And because what NXT has produced on TV is such high quality that they really are a lot of polished wrestlers. I mean, if you look at a lot of the guys that are the stars of NXT right now and the ones that are moving up into the main roster, from the Nevilles and the Finn Balors, you know, the Kevin Owens, those guys, they were truly polished pro wrestlers prior to becoming a part of NXT. And what NXT and WWE provides to those guys is a stage, a platform, you know. And Finn, who's a friend of mine, Fertile Devitt, Prince Devitt, however you want to choose to say his name, I personally think he has got the best entrance in all of professional wrestling right now. You could put his entrance on any product anywhere in the world at any time, and it blows everybody away. And that's what WWE provides. They take a guy like Prince Devitt, who was always an amazing wrestler,
right?
And then they give him the platform and the visual presence, and he's bringing out a personality that, you know, he's just completely continued to develop. It's an amazing process to watch, and you know what NXT is doing now in comparison to what FCW was is a completely different thing.
Oh yeah, no, it's not even. I mean, I've heard EC3. We mentioned him already. He was kind of always comparing
right.
the two as well, and he was there the
right.
same time you were.
Yep.
I got to say this: Finn Balor's entrance is right up there with the Undertaker as just a staggering entrance, which is very cool. And I've seen, because
yep.
I am a junkie for this stuff, I've seen his New Japan stuff, I've seen his UK
yep.
stuff, and I mean, just an amazing talent. And
yep.
it warms your heart to see him get the chance and making the most of it right now.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm happy for him because, I mean, we'd had discussions about it before, and his choices to do what he was going to do, and, I think it's one of those things with WWE obviously being the product that it is and the worldwide product that it is, as any professional wrestler to some degree, you say you want to go and be a success in the biggest company in the world, and I think he's truly getting that opportunity, and a lot of that, and from my understanding, is coming from Triple H. This is his MO, is to take those talents and that are amazingly good talents and give them that platform and give them that opportunity to find what maybe they never found before and just develop it into something that's going to be more than anybody ever expected.
Absolutely. And look, it's working. Everybody's talking about NXT.
Yep.
I want to talk a little bit about you. And last time we talked to you, you were heading over to Japan.
Yep.
And I mean, you've done huge things over there. Right now you're a part of KES.
Well, that's usually because I'm taller than them. But
that's what my wife was saying to me before the interview. She's like, is he the really tall guy? I'm like, yep. Yeah, so she knows who you are. But I got to talk to you. We talked a little bit about the tag team scene that you always seem to be a part of, from Kid Cash to
yep.
Jimmy Rave to yourself. Why do you think you've always kind of fallen into the tag realm?
I don't know. I think, a lot of times I was the big guy element within the tag team situation, because if you look at a lot of the tag teams I've been a part of, from the Kid Cash to, teaming with Ron the Truth Killings at one point,
right.
to teaming with Jimmy Ray with Rock and Rave, to teaming with Kurt Hawkins in WWE,
that was awesome.
I was always the, quote-unquote Kevin Nash element of these tag teams,
Right.
And then, obviously with Davey and I, it was a very different situation because I might be an inch and a half, if that, or 2 inches taller than him, but he's a 6'5", 265, 270-pound legit, bad dude, and he's,
right.
he's an awesome, he's got the lineage, he's got the ability, he's got the look, he's got so many factors that are going to lead into him being so much bigger in the business at some point, because he's still young, he's 28 or 29 years old. Dang it. but to put him and I together, I was no longer just the big guy in the group. And now I think it's two big old dudes with two different skill sets and two different personalities, but we're working extremely well together because we want to be a success. I mean, I think we understand that we can be single stars, but I think at the same time, we work very hard to make sure that KES, the Killer Elite Squad,
right.
is what people see, notice, and want to see more of every time that we step in the ring.
I got to tell you, the awesome thing about being a wrestling fan right now is, I look at it this way. My favorite time in the business was probably the 80s, but it was most exciting in the 90s when you'd go to the mall and you'd see a dude walking down the hallway wearing a Austin 316 shirt next to a guy walking the other way wearing an NWO t-shirt. And right now I'm seeing
right.
a lot of... obviously you see all the WWE shirts and you see the occasional Ring of Honor shirt, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff like the Bullet Club t-shirts. And why do you think that New Japan style, which has never really, except for the hardcore junkies that, like myself, who just reach out for anything that's wrestling, why do you think it's reaching out to more of the mainstream wrestling fan?
I think they've done a good job. I mean, obviously with YouTube and dailymotion.com, it's something that makes it extremely easily accessible to the wrestling fans. You know, when I started there, there was really only, as far as American Gaijin, there was, you know, myself, Giant Bernard, who, you know, obviously became right. Tenzai, and who was A-Train before, and then Carl Anderson. And, you know, Carl had not had any real U.S. mainstream publicity, and he'd been completely succeeding in Japan with Giant Bernard and tag team and doing amazing things for the last several years prior to them getting there. But in the last couple of years, you know, they've just really added a lot of good American talents along with several foreign talents. You know, obviously they had Prince Devitt and things like that there. But adding, you know, obviously like the AJ Styles and, you know, bringing in the Young Bucks and the kids and all these guys who have names and recognition in the States, what they're doing is the people who still follow them are following New Japan because of that in America. And then they're obviously starting to see the Tanahashis and the Okadas and the Shinsuke Nakamuras and all the talent that exists, you know, and from the cruiserweights like the Kushidas and whatnot that exist out there, you know, that they didn't know existed before. Well, now because they're paying attention to the guys and girls they know, well, really just the guys until most recently, you know, now they're starting to see the other wrestlers that have just gone and done amazing things. I mean, to me, there's a lot of people that say different people are the best in the world. But to me, absolutely the best in the world, and it's because of his ability, his look, his ability to change his style depending on the crowd and how they're acting and reacting to him. He's obviously done what he's done for New Japan is Tanahashi. You know, they say there's a pre-Tanahashi and post-Tanahashi age. There was a business age for New Japan that had really dropped off and was really bad and gone down. And then when Tanahashi really stepped up and started to become their number one star, that's when business for New Japan really started to take its upswing. And I think if you really, really watch a lot of what Tanahashi does, he has that ability as the number one babyface, the number one face of the company to go into a territory, a place, a town, a city, and depending on how they act and react to him, that he gets kind of that John Cena vibe where, you know, obviously kids love him and women love him and some men are okay with him, but, you know, there's a lot of that male, you know, we don't like you, Cena-esque type fanfare that he gets. And sometimes you'll see him if he goes into a city or a town that is more male-dominated, and he's getting booed or jeered or he's not getting the reactions he normally gets as the straight-up, you know, pure babyface. He's one of those guys that can change his style in the ring, and he doesn't go full heel or anything to that degree, but he gets a little more nasty. He gets a little more crappy. He gets a little more like, I'm going to just punch you right in the nose, whereas before I was going to fight you, you know. And it's a really cool process to see, especially when you get to see it live, you know. Getting to watch him and Okada and knowing the story that they've had and watching them at the Tokyo Dome this last year live, I was like a kid in a candy store, and I was jumping and up and down when they do different things. And when guys would kick out, I was like, oh, cheering like I was a kid again. It's just fun. It's just amazingly fun.
Absolutely. And I've seen him work. And I mean, like I said, I'm a junkie for this stuff. I can't. If the TV's on, it's probably either on baseball, football, or wrestling. So that's
well. Well, two out of three. Good for you.
Can I take it?
No, not on TV, man. I love the live atmosphere that baseball provides. I mean, if you go to a game, I think it's awesome. But when they're playing 183 games or whatever they play a year, I think it's kind of redundant. But that's just me.
It does. It's kind of like when they lose, you know, I want to be mad, but it's like, well, there's always tomorrow because
yep.
There's 1,000 freaking games, whereas in the NFL there's 16, and if they lose, they
yep.
really feel like they've lost some ground. And obviously, you were a college
yep.
quarterback, right?
Yeah, I was, but, you know, talking about the baseball thing, I really wish I'd have stayed in baseball at this point because I was a pitcher in high school, and I kind of got out of it because I really, really wanted to play football. Obviously football didn't pan out. I wish I would have stayed with baseball because I truly believe if I'd have gotten some good coaching through college and whatnot, I think I would have had a chance to play some pro ball, even if it was just at a semi-pro level, but who knows?
Yeah. And there's been some real big dudes in there too, like Randy Johnson was probably about your height if I was to guess.
Here's a fun fact. I randomly saw Randy Johnson walking down the street in Tokyo one day.
Okay.
It was pretty cool. Like me and a couple other guys were walking around, and there was Randy Johnson, you know, standing out at 6'8", you know, same mustache, everything. I was like, that's Randy Johnson. And my friend goes, who? I was like, Randy Johnson. He's a famous pitcher in the States. And he goes, really? And he yells his name out. He's like, Randy! And he just kind of looked and just kept walking where he was going. So, you know, I mean, because baseball is such a big thing in Japan, it doesn't surprise me. He was probably brought over for something, you know, an appearance of some sort.
Yeah, he is currently he's an ambassador of sorts for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I know that because I live in Arizona. So, and he's going to the Hall of Fame as a Diamondback, which is very cool for us to have a Hall of Fame.
Oh, very cool.
There you go. All right, so I'm going to let you go soon, but it's been awesome talking to you. But I want to ask you a couple more questions. Taking it back to Global Force. When do you think that we're going to start hearing some of those? Obviously, the talk's already there, but when do you think we're going to start hearing some of those grumblings about when there's going to be a TV deal announcement? Do you have any inclination on that at all?
That I have no clue, man. I know that, you know, obviously there's the July 24th TV taping. You know, Davey and I will be making our global wrestling debuts in August, or excuse me, in August, and there's a TV taping in August, and we're going to be doing some stuff in September. Obviously, as dates come open and available, I know that Global Force has a ton of the Grand Slam tour with the baseball stadium set up. I know they have several TV tapings already lined up. From my understanding, all at the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas. But I have no clue as to when any of that's really going to be popped off as to showing up on TV or anything like that. The one thing that Jeff has really done, which I think some people have kind of gotten like impatient with, is he's trying to do it the right way. He's trying not to do too much too soon. He's not trying to go overboard when he shouldn't go overboard and then produce a product that shouldn't be out there. He's trying to do it the right way. And I think once he does do it the right way and at the right time, it's what's going to help make it really, really good when it starts to pop.
And that's true. And he's had experience in building a company from the ground up before. So obviously he's learned from these experiences too.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, I can't wait to see you back on American television. I can't wait to see you back in Japan, too. I mean, I check out all that stuff on I get either DVDs of it or I check it out on YouTube, as you said, or Daily Motion. So I keep an eye on that stuff all the time. And it's a great time talking to you. And hopefully I've worked it out. I talked to you in 2005. I talked to you in 2010. And here we are in 2015. So I'll see you in 5 years. But this time, let's keep it with Global Force Wrestling, okay?
All right. Well, when we pop on...
Hey, this is AJ Styles, and you're listening to Interactive Interview.
And welcome back here to WrestlingEpicenter.com's The Interactive Interview, Interactive Wrestling Radio. On the line with me now is my co-host, Patrick Kelly. Patrick, are you there?
I am here. How you doing, man?
Doing great, doing great. We just wrapped up with Lance Archer, Lance Hoyt. Great interview and a great dude.
Yeah, I remember I was a part of the first interview we did with him years ago, and he was a very nice guy.
Was it the first one? The first one we did was in 2005, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I probably wasn't
on that one then.
I can't think. I think you started just shortly after that. Wasn't Just Incredible your first interview?
No, it was Simply Luscious.
A good place to start.
Yeah, where is she now? I don't even...
She's had a kid.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I guess she still works in Texas somewhere. At one point, I'm not going to go there. She does have a kid. I looked her up, about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, because I was thinking, whatever happened to her? She was good looking. She could work. People forget she could work. I know with the name, you kind of get lost in the name. Oh, she's Simply Luscious. She's going to be basically, you know, just tits and ass. But she could work.
Mm-hmm.
And
at a time when almost none of the women could work.
Well, that's the funny thing is she was on shows with people where it was like her and Alexis Lurie, Mickie James, who were the ones who could work, and then you got girls like Riptide who went in there, which Amber Orsini, and a lot of I'm getting off topic, but a lot of those companies have such a bad rap of never having had good matches, like WEW and all the other, you know, gorgeous ladies of wrestling and things like that. But if you really stripped it down, and most of them did strip it down, but if you really did watch the shows, there was a couple of good workers on each of those shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they had good matches. Unfortunately, it was overshadowed by the PWO tryouts, which essentially were lesbian scenes filmed for the pay-per-view audience. I mean, you really got lost in that. So I saw Angel Orsini. She did a jump off the top of a ladder, threw a table, and shattered her ankle. And it was a spectacular spot, right? And nobody's going to remember that, because that's the night that, in the backstage segment, G.I. Ho was doing a lesbian scene. And it's like, why would you break your ass for a show that's only going to be viewed based on the TNA?
That's a good question.
Anyway, we got way off topic. No, Lance Hoyt did a really good interview with us. No, I didn't. We interviewed him in 2005. I interviewed him the day that I was leaving for a birthday trip. I was going with my girlfriend at the time, and the day we were about to leave, I did the interview with him, and then we interviewed him again just after he left WWE about 5 years ago.
Okay, so that's probably the one I was on.
There you go, and I joked with him at the end of the interview. I said, you know, it's been we had you on in 2005 to talk about TNA, 2010 about going to Japan, now 2015, so I guess I'll see you in 5 years. And, you'll hear it, and those of you in radio land already have heard it. He said, give them a call when they get on TV, and we'll do another one. So I'm going to hold them to that.
Interesting. And Global Force shaping up should be really interesting for down the road. Again, I hope it's good. You know, the more wrestling out there, the better. I mean, these guys are going to need work.
And I like the feel of what I'm seeing so far. Now, I can't go too far with carrying my battle flag into the battle, because there's not even been a show yet. But I like what I'm seeing from Jarrett's blueprint. I like what he's trying to accomplish with the roster. He's trying to get a good mix of international talent as well as young talent, as well as veterans to teach the young talent. So he's really doing a good job assembling a pretty killer roster, and if they can get a decent TV spot, I have my suspicions they'll end up on something like Country Music Television, because Toby Keith is involved in it. So if they can get on CMT, which is carried by basically everybody who gets basic cable gets CMT, that would be a big thing. They'd have a better TV deal than TNA right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. Well, TNA might not have a TV deal in a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah. We got to talk a little bit about that. Now, last night we did the interview, but it was also a little bit of a celebration for wrestling fans, because there was five hours of new wrestling last night.
Mm-hmm. And from four different companies. We had Lucha Underground, which has been on Wednesday nights since October of last year. If you are subscribed to the WWE Network, obviously you get NXT. They air their new episodes on Wednesdays. And then we had Ring of Honor debuting on Destination America, and we had TNA moving to Wednesday nights on Destination America. So, that's a lot of wrestling content right there.
It is, and it's good stuff. And as you said, and we said off the air, every show had something to enjoy about it.
Yeah, even TNA, who, you know, we typically shit on these days for one reason or another, but you know, the tag match was good. EC3 continues to be great. So there's some good stuff on there. Now, you know, I don't know about James Storm pushing Mickie James under the train tracks or anything like that. That was a little goofy, but, you know. but there was some stuff to enjoy there.
It's a mixed bag. The main thing is, and this is what was said in the interview, and I backed it up, and I'm going to say this again. I was one of the ones who choked down some WCW shows that were virtually unwatchable in late 2000 and 2001.
Yeah, and there were a lot of them.
There were some pretty bad ones, and I choked it down because I felt like, look, everybody's saying this is great, WWE, you know, well, WWF at the time is going to be the king, and it's like, all right, ECW was already gone by the time Guilty as Charged happened, because they canceled all their house shows. they were done. They did a couple of shows in the Arkansas area, but that was it. And after January, they were done and dead to rights, and I think everybody knew it. And if they didn't, when Paul Heyman showed up on TV, and that kind of set it up. So WCW lasted a few extra months, and it was over. I mean, my thought was, why would you want there to go from being three viable shows, all of which offering something good, to only one? And that's what happened, and I told you this story, and I'll stand by it. Except for independent tapes, I didn't watch wrestling until the NWO came back in whatever it was, February of 2002. So I skipped almost a whole year of watching anything that resembled mainstream wrestling.
And to be honest, you didn't miss much. Because the invasion happened, the quote-unquote invasion, and that was pretty much all you missed.
And it wasn't done well, right?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, man. I mean, it's just, I have no problem, and you found this out since WrestleMania. I didn't like what they did to Sting. I told you I was pissed. I said, of course I'm going to come back to WWE at some point and watch, but right now I'm pissed at them. And I stopped watching, and I'm still pissed at them, and I have not watched since March 29th. And I think that, you know, as much as I've been mad at TNA, and everybody's been mad at TNA at some point or another, I mean, if they did a rise and fall of TNA disc, they'd have to rename it the Rise and Fall and Rise and Fall and Rise and Fall of TNA, because they've gone up and down so many times and just not died. They're like that chicken in the Family Guy fight.
I was thinking like the Black Knight from Monty Python.
That works. Exactly. They won't, and good for them for not dying. It speaks to their desire to succeed that they continually keep going despite continuously either self-inflicted or otherwise getting themselves screwed over.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, you know, I don't know how much you want to get into it, but you know a little bit more about the Destination America situation than some do.
What do you mean?
Well, because you said that, you know, you've heard that they were a pain in the ass to deal with.
Oh, yes. A friend of mine, his wife works for the Discovery Channel, and they have an office in Silver Spring, Maryland. And if you notice that press release that announced that Ring of Honor was coming to Destination America, it's from Silver Spring, Maryland. So it came from that office. And this friend of mine, he's a wrestling fan, so he asked his wife, you know, ask them around. Ask, you know, the Destination America people what it's like working with TNA. And apparently they're a pain in the butt to work with. That's what was said, you know. So I can't confirm any of that being true. It's just, you know, he said, and then she said, and then he said, and then he said. It's
exactly.
Kind of like a game of telephone. So,
exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So I can't confirm any of that, but that's what I was told.
And you also have to put into consideration what their perspective is, and their being TNA's. They had Spike TV, and even though Spike TV did criminally little to promote them, being on such a well covered network in the age of so many other options, to be on one that's available on all basic cable systems was a big boost for them. And then going to this station, which frankly I never heard of prior to TNA going there, it's a big drop off. And maybe they were pushing to get more promotion, and maybe that's why they were viewed as a pain in the ass, because they were like, look, you need to help us. You need to help us. You need to promote us. We need, you know, we need to get on Netflix. We need this, that, and the other. You know, you need to be the ones to initiate this for us. And
right, because I'm with you. I'd never heard of Destination America before TNA wound up on that channel.
Indeed. And I mean, what are you going to watch? You know, a bunch of rednecks chasing around ghosts or whatever. Which sounds a lot better than it is, but Their programming is not exactly blue ribbon winning here.
Do you remember when TNA first got onto Spike, what the lead-in show was on Saturdays before Impact?
Was it that ridiculous show, like almost like a precursor to Wipeout?
No, it was like this fat redneck show. And I never knew what it was, but it was terrible. I would always catch like the tail end of it because... you know, I would tune in to watch Impact. I'm like, this show is awful. This is their lead-in?
I don't know. I never saw it.
I remember when Raw had episodes of Star Trek as their lead-in. I think they were on TNN when that happened. They had episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was like, I might as well. Well, I'll watch old episodes of Star Trek. Why not?
Yeah. I was. They had Nitro used to have the tail end of ER. And the Sunday morning shows, people don't remember this, but Saturday morning, 9:05, was wrestling on TBS. And I don't even know. The show name changed. It was either Pro or Main Event or whatever. They seemed to shuffle them around a little bit. But I remember watching Bonanza. And to this day, that comes in handy whenever we play, like, TV trivia. Because I caught the last tail end of Bonanza, so I remember that. Even though I never watched the show from start to finish, I caught the tail end of it. And because of that 9:05, I caught the 5 minutes. And
really weird how TBS used to do that.
You know why that is, right?
Didn't it have something to do? They wanted to catch the channel flippers?
Exactly. The first commercial break usually happens between 4 and 5 minutes in to the TV show. That's when the theme mm-hmm. song would play or whatever, and then go to commercial. So their thinking was, by having it staggered 5 minutes, they would be just starting when people were starting to flip the channels. Nowadays, mm-hmm. People don't flip as much as they used to. So it really doesn't serve a purpose. But I don't know. I always thought it was a cool thing, and they haven't done it in decades, 15 years right. probably.
Yeah.
But cool thing.
But yeah, four different wrestling shows, and really, I was telling you off the air, looking at all four shows, I enjoyed all four shows at least a little bit. I think Ring of Honor show, unfortunately, it was, and for those that don't know, the show that Ring of Honor is airing on Destination America is the same show that they've aired in syndication on local channels in various markets throughout the country. So this is something that had already been pre-taped, so it didn't feel like a grand debut or anything, and it felt like we were coming in the middle of the story because it was made before they even knew they were in Destination blah, blah. Not a grand debut or anything, but as far as like a solid show of wrestling, it was pretty solid.
It was, and you're right. We've come to expect, it's their debut show, so what's going to happen is Paul Heyman going to stand there and cut a 15-minute promo on how much the station sucks? I'm sorry. Everybody wants to tell me what a great businessman Paul Heyman was and all that. The guy is a genius creatively, okay? But he has the business sense of a toddler throwing a hissy fit. For those who don't know what I'm referring to, the first debut show on TNN, ECW was told they wanted nothing. TNN told them they wanted nothing but new matches. So Paul Heyman, of course, made them air a pay-per-view match that had already been happened and aired between Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam. Now, admittedly, it's a hell of a match. But
mm-hmm.
deliberately not giving them what they asked for is a dick move. And then when they get pissy with you, to then cut a promo on that station to where they cut your audio because you're bad-mouthing the station that it's airing on, that's a dick move. There's a lot of reasons ECW died, and they all start with Paul and end with Heyman.
Yeah. Well, again, like you said, creative genius, absolutely. I would never want him in charge of my money, though.
Oh, God, no. There's been reports, and take this for what it's worth, because obviously her credibility is now not as high as it once was, but Tammy Sitch has sworn that that Paul Heyman used to buy the plane travel for the ECW roster on her credit card.
I can see that.
I believe it. I can see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, he had the wrestlers working the friggin' merchandise phone lines, didn't he?
Yeah, I talked to Stevie Richards once that way. It was I can even tell you the tape it was. It was Extreme Warfare. I wanted it because I saw the clip of Francine and Beulah rolling around on the mat together, and that's enough to get my money. So I called up about it, and I'm talking to the guy who has a real raspy voice, and I finally kind of go, this is Stevie, isn't it? No, this is Bob. I'm like, nah, this is Stevie. Okay, just don't tell anyone.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. So that's I even mentioned that to Stevie, and he kind of chuckled. I don't think they're real proud of that, but it was a mom and pop company at the beginning.
Mhm. Yeah. And but yeah, Ring of Honor, I think we'll really see what they bring probably after Best in the World. That's their next pay-per-view, and once they've gotten past that and they start taping their next run of shows, then we'll probably start seeing, a change in the attitude and the presentation.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. I had it on, and, I kind of know what to expect because I do keep up with Ring of Honor, even though I will admit in saying that I don't watch it that much, in that it's not readily available. It's not one of the areas that's not my area. I don't get it. So unless I download it off the internet, I don't get to see it. So I don't usually go out of my way to see it, but I did watch it, and Caroline walked in, and she said, "What are you watching?" I said, "Ring of Honor." She said, "You know what? For everything that Ring of Honor was and has built to become, the show looks impressive."
Yeah, it's the production could use a few tweaks here and there, especially in the lighting, but overall, it doesn't look bad.
No, it's nowhere near, and this is, kind of your laugh here, it's nowhere near the production of TNA, and I think that showed. The lighting is a lot better, more professional. Even the setup, even in the soundstage, the setup in the TNA area, the TNA arena, is much, much more polished than that of Ring of Honor's. But it didn't look like a high school gym.
Right.
It had a much more polished look than I think I expected to see.
Mm-hmm.
So
and it was also nice that... I like that there were some Japanese stars featured as well, because that's a good business working relationship that they have, and hopefully helps them out in the long run.
Hopefully, we talk about that with Lance Hoyt here. We talked about the Japanese stars and that they're getting a chance to shine on the American scale, and that's something that Global Force is going to apparently focus on too. I wonder if there's going to be any kind of conflict of interest between Global Force and Ring of Honor, because they both have a working relationship with New Japan. Then again, who knows? Maybe Global Force and Ring of Honor will have a working relationship with each other, to kind of all hold hands and sing kumbaya. And you know what? Rather than having everybody bring their own battle flag into battle and trying to stab each other in the back, if that's possible to be done in the cutthroat business that we're in, to all work together for the common good, then you know what? That might even be a positive change for the business through Global Force.
Yeah, and it's an interesting business model, because he basically wants to do the NWA, but on a global scale. So if that works out, I think it'd be great.
And I said that to Lance, and I could tell that he didn't really want to get into it, I don't think anyway, because he's part of the NWA Tag Team Champions right now. But it's succeeding. It's taking the NWA model that they've been trying to rebuild for, quite frankly, since the end of their run with TNA, and have never really fully accomplished. But Jarrett has kind of pieced it together piece by piece by piece without rushing into it, and it sounds like he's actually going to bring it to a national scale, and for that matter, global scale. So, I like what he's doing. I do like what he's doing.
Yeah, it's it should be very interesting once we actually get a TV deal in place and we start seeing what Jared gives us. But
I have this thing I have that's weird calm about it. I'm bricking myself thinking, oh, if TNA gets canceled at Destination America, who would possibly pick them up? This could be horrible. This could be catastrophic for them if they can't get another TV deal. Yet Global Force has a completely untested market, completely blank slate, and I have the utmost confidence that they're going to land a pretty good TV deal without a problem. So it's the matter of a company starting up and moving on the upswing versus a company that's clearly on the downswing.
Right, right, absolutely. But going back to the other shows, I know you don't watch NXT because you're kind of in fuck the WWE mode, which I can understand that. And Lucha Underground, I watched both of those shows. Those are actually my two favorite wrestling shows to watch week to week. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed them both once again. I thought the main event on Lucha Underground in particular was very strong.
What was the match?
It was Sexy Star versus Pentagon Jr. in a submission match. And I know a lot of people are turned off by the intergender matches that they do, but I kind of dig it. I don't know. It's just a different way to present the women. And Lucha Underground is such a comic booky kind of off the top. I mean, Robert Rodriguez is one of the producers, so it kind of shows. It's done in such an over-the-top and cinematic way that I'm willing to kind of – the suspension of disbelief is a lot higher on that show because they commit to their presentation style, and it works – they make it work beautifully for them, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of El Rey? I mean, the El Rey stations.
It's a cool little station. It's basically the Grindhouse channel. I mean, for nerds, it's pretty damn cool, actually, because they show nothing but – kung fu movies and, you know, kaiju movies and action movies and all this other stuff. So if you're into, like, you know, weird, obscure action movies and, you know, grindhouse films and stuff like that, I mean, that's basically the channel for you.
It's cool. And I like it. And like we've said, you know, several times, that's 4 hours of wrestling from four different companies. And that gives us a lot of a different spot. Now, a lot of people have come out and said it's like the glory days. I wouldn't go that far.
No, no.
We're nowhere near having Knots, and then the other companies that are doing revolutionary stuff that the Juggernauts steal. We're not at that point.
No, basically what we have now, we have one grand emperor and then a bunch of, like, small little areas here and there to enjoy. I mean, that's basically what we have at the moment.
And I just made a post on my Facebook page, not the Wrestling Epicenter, but my personal one. And my view on it is I have always, always gone out of my way to watch everything other than WWE in addition to WWE because I think that there – it would be like having the NFL without having the option of watching college or watching the Arena League or anything like that. Not that I watch much Arena League. Don't get me wrong. I do watch a few games here and there. But just having one place stagnates the market. So – especially when you have the same show essentially airing every week.
And, you know, WWE ran into that problem a few years, like in the mid-2000s there. They just – do you remember when they were bringing new guys in and they were all green as goose shit?
Oh, you want to give me an example?
La Resistance.
Okay.
Tyson Tomko, Luther Reigns, Mark Jindrak, all these guys that, you know, probably not untalented guys if they had – been put in a proper system to really hone their craft and pop. They were tells, but they were getting onto main TV and they were just green, like as anybody's business. And it's like, well, they had no experience prior to this. Jackie Gaeta, there's an example.
Oh, that match was pretty abysmal. I know when you heard her.
And it's not her fault. Like she gets none of the blame for that. She should not have been put out there.
No, if you put me in the ring, you know, I can flip off the top rope. I can land on the back of my neck and not break my neck. I can stand on my head. I'll do all this stupid shit for you. But if you expect me to go in there without any appropriate training or anywhere near the amount that would be required to be on a national television show,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to stink up the place.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the truth. I might be an okay athlete. I might even be pretty damn durable. But that was durable, not adorable. But I'm not a wrestler. And she wasn't a wrestler. She shouldn't have been put in that spot.
No. And but now, since we've moved past that and, you know, other companies have started up, like Ring of Honor and even TNA and stuff, people have found places to hone their craft and get better. And now, you know, the talent market got a lot better over the years.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, and to speak to what you just said, I do want to stick up for Rob Conway. You mentioned Larry.
He's another one, very talented guy. He just, you know, he was put in the limelight too soon.
Well, he was part of La Resistance. That's kind of why I'm sticking. I know you're
right,
more.
Right.
I think you were more referring to Rene Dupree and Sylvain, but
I was referring to all three of them. But yeah, and you know what, Sylvain, he got to a point towards the end there. I was like, you know, he's not so bad. But then they pulled the plug on him.
Yeah, well, that happens to a lot of guys. Unfortunately, you have a window of opportunity. If you're lucky, and
mm-hmm.
it's up to you to make the most of that. And sometimes they don't give you the best stuff. You got sometimes you got to go out there and make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Oh, look at Rusev. I mean, he's basically playing a gimmick that's 30 years too late.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially Nikolai Volkov in the 21st century.
And you know what? He plays it well. I mean, I can't fault him for that.
No, and it doesn't I can't talk tonight. It does not hurt having Lana on his arm.
Well, they've taken her away from
I
him.
I know now, but I'm saying when he started, that was not a bad pairing.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like Vince in 2014 was like, he finally got around to watching Rocky IV. God damn it, I need to have that on my show. And that's what he did.
Oh, man. So by that standard, at some point he's going to see Pirates of the Caribbean and realize that he screwed over Paul Burchill pretty damn hard.
Yes, he did. That's another one I don't understand, where it was like, yeah, and Paul Burchill was a talented guy, and he was fairly well-polished, and it was like, nah, he's going to be a pirate. And then by some miracle, he gets it over, and he's like, nah, we're going to squash it.
We're going to do an incest angle with him and his sister. What? Why?
Vince wants to do an incest angle. I mean, you saw the McMahon DVD, right?
Yes.
Yeah, where Stephanie's like, oh, he pitched an angle where he wanted to be the father of my baby, and he wanted Shane to be the father of my baby, and it's like, what?
You know,
first of all,
it's tough to defend our business sometimes based on the people who are the kings of it. Because it's like, and the Vic McMahons, and then you can show a picture of Vince Redface choking his daughter out, you know, with a lead pipe around her throat. It's like, and this is the company that will then try to say that the Benoit thing had nothing to do with them. I know that's hard, but that's a very hard road to just jump on. But it's true. You know, you have that in your archives. There's no, like, they're not untouchable. They're not infallible. They are very much a company that has put their ball, you know, on the outside of their clothes and put them out there for everybody to see. And I think that is partially why, despite the popularity of wrestling, which kind of is a oxymoron, it maintains their detractors, because the McMahons are so comic booky and they have such horrible stuff that they've done. The Kiss My Ass Club, the Katie Vicks, things like that. It's tough to defend stuff like that.
Oh, you can't. I mean, but you know what? This doesn't make it okay for them to be bad. And honestly, watching the show now, I think one of the main problems with the show, probably the main problem with the show, is the fact that there's just way too much television from that one brand. I'm not counting NXT in that, mainly because it kind of operates in its own separate little universe. It's under the WWE banner, but it doesn't necessarily affect what happens on Raw, typically. But when you consider that there's a three-hour Raw every week, a two-hour SmackDown, and now we're basically getting pay-per-views every 2 weeks, I mean, it's there's just too much content. And they burn through the stories too quickly, and matches get overexposed, and it kind of stagnates things.
I'm going to ask you a question now, and it came up in the interview. And it pertains
okay.
to this. Baseball or football? What would you pick?
Football.
Okay, why?
Truth be told, I like all the rules. I like just the way the game's structured and everything, but I think I know where you're going. It's the fact that every game matters. There's only, you know, you have 17 weeks to make
yeah.
it to the playoffs. Whereas in baseball... Yeah, as opposed to baseball, where you can lose 10 games in a row and still make the playoffs, because there's just so many games.
164 or 3, something like that. It's
mm-hmm.
a
yeah.
lot of games. And there's, you know, and I do watch baseball. I want everybody to know that. And I'm not by any means crapping on the game. I love it. I watch it almost every single time the Diamondbacks play. I have it on. But when it comes to going to the store and getting snacks and sitting down and getting red-faced and pumped up and watching the games, every game that matters, nothing beats football. And it's a whole different thing, because those games, like you said, matter. Well, when John Cena's facing the big bad heel every other week in a death-defying match where he gets blown up in a stoplight and still is fine the next night, at some point it's just like, all right, well, it becomes Broadway.
You know, okay, did he really... Seriously, being honest here, did he really need to wrestle Rusev four times? Was that really necessary?
Well, he would have wrestled him five if it wasn't for the injury to Rusev.
You think they were going to do another one?
I believe, wasn't that the original plan?
No, Rusev was going to be in the Elimination Chamber, and they replaced him with Mark Henry.
Oh.
No, so I think they were done with the Cena thing. Thank
okay,
God.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, I mean, you're right, and Rusev did get the win that one time, and then that's it. But
yeah, I mean, well, once Cena beat him at Mania, I feel like, okay, we're kind of done now. As a good guy won, story's over.
Yeah, I mean, well, they always do that. You know, there was Hogan-Andre matches after WrestleMania 3. They always kind of belabor the point. But
even that one, it's like, all right, they took a year to build up the second one. And Andre did win the Survivor Series match in between, so it's like, all right, they did something to reestablish the heel and make the rematch mean something.
That's true.
I mean, it's just, I mean, nowadays, it's just, and I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on Cena, it's just, this is just something they always do. It's just, they'll do one match, and then you will see nothing but that match for, like, three or four shows in a row, and then they'll pound it to death until you're sick of seeing it.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, that's where we are in this age where it's, and we mentioned Wednesday night, 5 hours of wrestling, but none of it was on Monday. So there's no direct competition. Not that any of those could compete at all with the numbers that WWE pulls down.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no direct competition, yet we're still having a show that's obviously competing against nothing. The belief is that, oh, we have to put on this pay-per-view quality show every week. Why? I mean, oh, well, there's more options now. Really? Because I think that the people who are watching are going to watch regardless what you put on the air. So
and to be perfectly honest, one of the things I love about NXT is the fact that they have squash matches, and the stories are allowed to build in a much slower pace, and then when you get to these two-hour specials that they do, they're incredible. And that's why they're incredible, because they take their time, they set up their, you know, to use a bowling analogy, they set up their pins, and then they go for the strike when it comes time to do the two-hour special. Lucha Underground, they will do smaller matches. They won't do the same match 2 weeks in a row, and you feel like you get a different experience week to week, and that's why that works. Ring of Honor, I don't really have a good feel of what their show is going to be like. I've only watched one episode, so I can't really judge it yet. TNA, they kind of have that tendency that the WWE does, where they'll just pound a match to death, and which is weird because they don't have any pay-per-views. Pretty much. I mean, I think it's
Angle and Young, which, by the way, they're good matches. There's nothing wrong with the matches, but mix it up.
Exactly. And you don't have to have the world title on the line either. That's ridiculous.
By the way, Angle just came out and said that his TNA schedule is rough on his body. And I'm thinking, dude, you want to go back to WWE? There's no way that would have worked.
Oh, no. Well, if he can get the Lesnar schedule, I mean...
Oh, yeah. Well, I used a Patrick Starr quote on Lesnar.
What was that?
Well, Goldberg said that Lesnar's a genius. And I said, reach for comment. Brock Lesnar said, does a genius come in a lamp?
But no, to go from my point that I can't, you know, talk about things getting overexposed. I mean, people complained about Lesnar being a part-time champion and everything, and there were points where it felt like, okay, they need to, like, have him cut a promo or, you know, do a training vignette or something just to remind us that he's around. But it did make the title matches feel more special, that they weren't just done all the time. It's like, oh, there's a title match. I can't miss that because we don't get that all the time.
That's true, and that's the positive. The negative is I'm not sold on him being a good worker. I've never been sold on him being a good worker.
I know what you mean. I definitely remember that run he had back in the early 2000s. And But I think he's a great athletic specimen that can be presented very, very well. And I think what we've seen probably since the Punk match, which was outstanding, but what we've seen is probably the best presentation of Lesnar that we've seen in his entire pro wrestling career.
I liked the style he worked at Mania, but he threw 85 freaking suplexes, and for some reason that's cool, but when anybody else does it, then they can't work.
Well, like, no, I mean, I know you're... No, it's only when Scott Steiner does it. That means you can't work.
Yeah.
I mean, but to be fair, though, I mean, that one match was dog shit. Where I'll defend Steiner is that people will say he always sucked and his career is meaningless, and I'm like, he had one bad year in the WWE. Let's be a little nicer to Scotty than that.
He was coming off an injury, too, which was...
He was not supposed to wrestle again. That's another thing.
No. And apparently he's stepping in, speaking of Scott Steiner, he's going to be in Global Force to help the young guys along, which will be a good thing. He's kind of
You know what? You want to talk about good stuff in TNA? I like Scott Steiner in TNA. I liked most of his work there.
I liked that they did the Steiner Brothers reunions in TNA, too. That was good, and we got to see the Steiners and Team 3D. I mean,
matches were way better than anybody thought they could be.
I don't know why everybody thought they would be. Is it because Rick was a part-timer at best at that point or what? But they were really
good. He looked old as shit, and nobody knew what they were going to get. And people just thought, oh, it's going to be a bunch of old farts kind of just floundering around. But, no, they had two pay-per-view matches, I think, and I thought both of them were good.
At the time, granted, Steiners were over 40, but old farts bouncing around. The other guys were in their 30s. By no means were they old farts.
Yeah. Well, you know how the internet works.
Yeah.
Christopher Daniels is an up-and-comer.
Who is he? He's got to be in his mid-40s at least.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not knocking Chris. I'm just saying, you know, it's really weird how it's like, oh, the old guys, and then they'll, you know, they'll sort of reflect.
Well, that's the weird thing. It's like, Hogan's old. We hate Hogan because he's old. Ric Flair's going to wrestle again. Yay. He's older than Hogan. Where's the logic here? That's an internet thing. But at least Don West wasn't there during anybody else's run other than Jerry Lynn's. He's 42!
I remember that. That was so weird.
Like it's an accomplishment to live that long.
And you know what? I'm willing to bet money on this. That was a Russo thing.
What, making fun of Don West or burying Jerry or what?
No, Jerry. I guarantee you that was a Russo thing, if I had to bet money on it.
Yeah, maybe.
Sounds like something he would do.
It doesn't help Jerry Lynn any. But
no.
the selling of it, like, he did a sunset flip, and instead of screaming about the move, it was like, he's 42! Like, Christ, it's not Mae Young. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Like Randy the Lamb Robinson in there.
There you go. I mean, what is Jeff Jarrett probably is about 5 years difference in age than Jerry Lynn is. I mean, and nobody was screaming, he's 38! You know, they weren't doing that. I don't know. It just seemed ridiculous. But,
yeah.
It was the other thing. We had Joel Gertner on, and Joel Gertner was one of the guys who was championing. You know, for all who crap on the business, there's 5 hours of good wrestling to watch tonight. Shut up and enjoy. And that's almost a verbatim quote, so good for him for saying it. When he was in TNA, he was part of the Rainbow Express. And he was trying to explain why him, the quintessential stud muffin, who is a womanizer, was managing a tag team that was ambiguously gay. And he's trying to...
Was it ambiguous?
Somewhat. It was Kiwi, Bruce, as they called him, and Lodi. And the entire time he's trying to tell the story of this, of why he's their manager, the very unkempt and unpolished Don West kept screaming, shut up, no one cares, shut up and wrestle, the entire time. And it's like, you just buried him, and he never recovered in TNA from that.
Yeah,
I love Don West. But he would say stupid stuff that would kill people.
Yeah, Don, especially in those earlier shows, really needed some direction.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we've kind of gone way off topic. Anyway, a good time to be a wrestling fan, even if it's not the glory days. Let's all kind of keep it under our hats a little bit. But it is.
No, but it is, you know, Wednesday nights are pretty exciting. And if you're looking for good wrestling content, I think, you know, you've got four options.
Yeah, and you can't then say that there's nothing for you, because there's something to watch. And if you've got anything that resembles a decent television distributor, you have at least two or three of these options to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the network, you got the fourth. So there's no reason that you should be able to say, well, there's nothing for me in wrestling, because there's a lot to choose from. We're not in the glory days. The glory days may never come back. We're never going to have one rebel little company and two juggernauts going at it. I mean, that's never going to come about, at least not anytime soon that I could foresee. But we do have good shit to choose from.
No, and I'll say this. All four of those options on Wednesdays, completely different shows, and you're getting different experiences out of all of them. NXT, it's basically new age talent with, like, 1980s style booking.
Logic,
and I mean
yeah.
That. Yeah, and I love the way it's booked. Lucha Underground, it's basically a show within a show. It's more like a television drama than it is a wrestling show.